Accession number 31432, Mr. Tug Wilson, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Wilson?
I was born in Melton Mowbray, in Rosebery Avenue, just over the just around the corner here, on the 4th of December 1936.
Now, could you tell us a bit about your family background? You know, what your parents did for a living, what sort of a childhood?
Well, my mother was normally just a general cleaner and that sort of thing. My father worked at Stamp and Staveley at Holwell on the furnaces, pig iron and all that sort of thing.
So hard work, hard manual labour.
Yeah, and if you your relief didn't turn up, you had to do a double shift, that sort of thing. It was that time of, well, that's how it was in those days.
And were there any others in the family, brothers and sisters?
I did have a half-sister. She's sadly passed away a few years ago.
And were you reasonably comfortably off for the time? And for
I should think from... Well, I mean, I was born in 36. Well, the war started 39 and things were scarce. You know, it's no different. My dad worked at the steelworks and my mother did odd jobs, cleaning or that sort of domestic sort of thing. Well, I wouldn't say we were well off, but we always had food on the table, I suppose.
Now, had your dad been in the Great War, the First War?
I don't know really what he did. It was to do with horses. I can remember, there's a photograph of him somewhere with him sitting on a horse, which was in Ireland. Apart from that, I don't know.
Now, you were three when the war started, three to eight during it. Did the war affect you in any way as a child? I mean, can you remember the war? And I'm not expecting you to remember a great deal about it.
Well, what I can remember about it, really, it was quite an exciting time, really. Didn't understand what was going on, obviously, but watching aircraft fly over, and we had an air base up at Melton, and we had one or two aircraft come down and things like that, where we used to see it fly over. We'd chase it on bikes and see where it crashed, and I know it was a bit morbid, but it's the sort of thing.
And so you took an interest. Did you follow the progress of the war, or were you too young? I mean, was it just something exciting going on around you?
Well, see, I was only three when it started, so I wasn't really interested. I was more interested when the Flying Enterprise broke in half, and Kurt Carson and somebody, Jim Dancy, or somebody Dancy. That was in after the war, but it was about 1948,
47. I'll come back to that. Now, what about, did rationing affect you much? I mean, I'm thinking of sweet rationing.
No, because everybody gave me their sweet coupons. So I had more sweets then than I do now.
And any bombing in Melton?
Yes, there was a bomb dropped in the brook just up the road here, where they're doing the roadworks, on Thorpe End. And my house, the back, looked towards the brook. And I can also remember, it was early morning, must have been, after 7, 8 o'clock time. I can't remember what day it was, but my dad heard this noise and he went out and you could see, he said he saw it was a German aircraft. And it was shooting at the gasometer at the gasworks, and he says under the stairs. So being a kid, I was under the stairs with my head hanging out looking round when the bomb went off. Our actual fire went out and then relit, and the kitchen table, it had about 2 inches of soot all over it with one brick right in the middle. I can always remember that. But it blew the windows out, blew everything out. I also remember that.
So quite a close escape.
It was a good bang. Everybody was cowering. My mum and my dad was in the on the pantry under the stairs, which was quite a safe place actually, but there was me hanging my head out looking what was going on when it went off. And I actually saw the fire went out and then reignited. It's
been blown out and then just...
Yeah, and I can remember, I've never seen so much bloody soot in my life. It must have been 2 inches thick all over the kitchen table, and there was one house brick sat in the middle. Where it came from, God knows. It was stuck in the middle of the table.
Did you have to move out at all? Or,
no,
I mean,
no.
Or was it all super, just a big clean-up job?
Yeah, it was a blown-out windows. I know it did. Somebody got killed. I think it threw a tree up and it landed on somebody's house and he was still in bed. And
were there any other air raids or close escapes, or was that the one that...
I mean, we could... apparently, from what I was told, you could see the glow from Coventry when they were being bombed from here in the sky.
But you don't remember?
No, not really. I mean, I know there was one or two aircraft had to go at the whole steelworks, but nothing untoward.
Now, anything else about the war? I mean, you were only 8 or 9.
Yeah.
I can't work out when.
I remember chasing up the road to watch one or two aircraft crash. We also had
now tell me about that. What would you see when you got to the scene? I know I'm not.
Well, it was the police and that were there. You couldn't go near it anyway. Apparently, it was on Saxby Road, which is up the road there. The aircraft, I think it was a Wellington bomber, came over on fire, which I think it was trying to land at on the Dalby Road aerodrome at the time. And as he came in, he hit a haystack and turned over. And they was all killed, apparently. And apart from that, we had an American glider land in a field. It broke loose, and I was there when they actually took it away, and that was an experience to watch that.
In what way?
Well, when they came to take it away, they down the field, they put two big poles up with the cable from the aircraft onto these in a big loop, and a Dakota bomber with a hook on came flying down, hooked it. I dread to think what the pilot's neck was like when he snatched him off the ground. But
quite something to see,
yeah.
Were there any celebrations at the end of the war that you remember? Because then you would be older. I mean, V-Day, do you remember?
Street parties.
Now, tell me, because they don't have street parties like that anymore. What was a street party like, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, a street party was everybody got involved. You had tables down the middle of the street. Obviously, there was no cars about in those days as such. And everybody chipped in with jellies, cakes, all that sort of thing, what they could muster at that time, because everything was on ration. I can remember coming home when I joined the Navy in 52 with meat coupons and things like that.
But and would there be were they drinking as well? I mean, you wouldn't notice at 8, presumably.
No, there was, I suppose the adults had beer and whatever, but the kids, it was pop and things like that. And I also remember there was a chap called Stan Davis. He was a hairdresser in Melton, and he organised all the races where he'd have a sixpence and he'd throw it, and everybody used to chase it and all this stuff. Silly games like that, but it was a good time. I mean,
Now tell me about your education. That would have started during the war and then run through. You know,
yeah.
But tell me about your education. How did you do at school, or so?
Well, I wasn't very bright. Let's put it that way. Normal secondary education.
Any subjects you liked or any you didn't like?
Science, funnily enough. Science. Because I always remember I got 100% on science on one exam. But, and then...
What didn't you like then? Because you...
Well, I didn't like maths and all that sort of thing. But there was one funny thing about it. The class I was in, I was a little bit ahead of others, and I got moved class just when the exams came up, and it was maths. Oh, sorry. And it was maths, And I always remember, I've still got the school report, I got 2 out of 100. Because the maths they were doing in the class they shoved me to was nothing like the ones they were doing before. So nobody was very pleased, but we persevered. And well, it's just a secondary education.
Just normal. What about sport? Any big interest in sport?
I used to be able to run, funnily enough. I know I'm small and that, but I was quite quick. But school sports and everything like that. And also, when I joined up, everybody had to do sport, whether you liked it or not.
So, any hobbies outside of school, you know, as you're growing up? Any like Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade, Army Cadets, or
Navy? Yeah, I was in the ATC.
Now that stands for just
Air Training Corps.
Now tell me about that.
It was just like one evening a week you had an Air Force uniform type thing.
What, proper?
Yeah, with a cap and all the lot. And then you go there and they do a bit of marching and all that sort of thing, instill a little bit of discipline into you. And after a while, you played table tennis and all them sort of things. And then on a Sunday morning, they used to have a kind of church parade and march up and down the schoolyard and all that business.
Did they do aircraft recognition and things
I went to, we went on different places. I remember I've flown in a Lancaster bomber with a parachute on my back.
What was that like?
Wonderful.
That would be your first flight, I presume.
That was my first flight, I think. Sure it was.
And what you tell us, take us it, back
we,
to
we came, I think we was down where was it? Holton? Anyway, the Lancaster flew over Melton to let us have a look at Melton and then took us all the way back again. And the worrying thing about it was having this parachute stuck on your back, because I don't think I could ever jumped out of the damn thing. No.
You'd
no
have been
way.
Nervous.
Well, you're only that age, and I mean...
And oh, actually, when did you start with the Air Training Corps? Do you know how old you were?
I can't remember. You had to be about 12 or 13, something around that area, I should think.
It's about 1949.
48, 49, something like that. Also in the St John's Ambulance Brigade.
I'll come back to that. Anything else for the Air Training Corps? Did you go on weekend camps?
We went camps.
Tell me about the camps. What would you do on a camp?
That's it, you go flying and then you do aircraft recognition and everything in general, a bit of sport.
These were annual camps, were they, or weekend?
Well, there were probably weekend camps.
So they didn't go away for 2 weeks or a week on a big camp?
Oh, no.
And did you enjoy the Air Training Corps?
Oh, yeah.
How long did you stay in it then?
2 or 3 years. Oh, hang on, till I was 15 and a half, because I went out of there and joined the Navy in 1952.
So you stayed right up to the end, really.
Yeah.
Now, any other big hobby? You mentioned St John's Ambulance Brigade.
Yeah, and also there's Cubs and Scouts.
Tell us about St John's first.
St John's, it was one thing, you just learn first aid. And
now, what made you join it? That wasn't so common as the Boy Scouts and things.
Yeah.
Why?
There wasn't much to do in those days. I think I joined because the girl I fancied went to St John's Ambulance Brigade. I'm sure it was. But I was in the church choir as well.
And how far did they get you with their first aid training? I mean, was it useful?
Oh, bandages and splints and all that sort of thing, and artificial respiration in the old-fashioned way and all
and
that.
And was it another one night a week?
One night a week, yeah. And then you used to go out to places like point-to-point meetings. What good you were going to do if somebody fell off a horse, I don't know. But
so you did actually sort of use it. You didn't do football matches as well, did you?
Oh, no.
So it's just smaller things.
Smaller things, yeah.
Enjoy
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, what I can remember of it, yes. I mean, it was a night out and you got a cup of tea and a cake and all that sort of thing.
And what about the other thing, the Boy Scouts, the Cubs and Boy Scouts? Was that important, or was it?
Well, I think most boys joined the Cubs in those days. Cubs, and then you went from Cubs into Scouts.
Tell us, what would you do? How military was it? Because that's one of the reasons we're interested, is how military the Scouts are or aren't at that stage in your area.
Well, there was discipline, but you had to be dressed properly, and you just couldn't go anyhow. And
what sort of activities you do? What did you do when you went?
Oh, learn to tie knots and make things, light a fire without matches and all that sort of thing. On a camp, it was.
Did you go camping much?
Well, no, not in those days. I can always remember going to the Isle of Wight. And one vivid thing I remember, they had the latrine, was a little hole in a hole in the ground with a canvas square around it, and one of the women who went with it was using it, and a train went by and set fire to all the grass around it. You know, absurd things. But what it's like, what the Scouts did, they went trekking and all that sort of thing. And collecting now, things.
Now, you left school at 14, so that'd be what?
No, 15.
15, oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. So that would be what, 19? So what were you going to do?
I went to work when I left school, because I did a project in the last year at school about the Navy. Well, you more or less, in them days, you had to they didn't tell you what you were going to do. There was, but the three of us, we had an inkling to go into the Navy.
What caused that?
I don't know. There must have been something macho about it, I suppose. But I think you knew you were going to be called up for National Service. I didn't fancy the Army, so I picked the Navy.
But you knew you'd have to volunteer?
Oh, we volunteered, yeah, when I was 15.
Now, so what can you go and work first, do you? Or
yes, I worked for the Leicester Evening Mail.
What as?
Well, just an office, general office boy, just up the road here. And they have their offices, but they're no non-existent now.
So just general office duties?
Yeah, general office, dog's body, gopher, you know, that sort of thing.
So that was just for 51 to 50?
Yeah, something like that.
Do you enjoy it?
Not really.
Why not?
Because you were stuck in an office and you didn't knock off till 4 o'clock or half past four. And that was it.
Now, tell me how you came to volunteer to join the Navy then. How did you go about it?
Well, it was a project we did at school. Most of them did projects on what they think they'd like to do. And there was three of us who decided on the Navy. And it was just a matter of finding out about different things when we had lots of ships in those days. And it went from there. And when
so how did you do it?
Well, I applied. Well, I had to get permission from my father and all that to sign forms and that. Went to Leicester Naval Recruiting place, and then from there on it progressed.
Do you remember the tests? How strict were the tests? Because they're having all sorts of tests today. They don't take everybody, do they?
Oh, not now. They did in those days. They did in those days. They weren't so particular. But you did a little bit of an educational test, a few simple sums and a bit of spelling and all that sort of thing. Nothing there. And then I went on.
Now, when did you join? So that was 1952?
May 1952.
So where were you told to go? And
I went to HMS Ganges at Shotley, Ipswich.
Now, what was you know, when you arrived there, you know, you arrive as a civilian, yeah, and a young lad too.
Yeah. I mean,
and what was the reception like? You know, you walked through the gates or you fetched from the station.
Actually, the bus we picked up off the station at Ipswich, and they stopped outside the gate, and they said, has anybody changed their mind? Now's your last chance. You can turn round and go back. But nobody jumped off the bus.
And what happened when you went into the gate? How did you?
Well, it was an annex for new recruits. You went,
It was very friendly, funnily enough. Very friendly. We only just, you know, left school and just come from home, and so they were quite pleasant.
Now tell me about the kitting out, because you've got
Well, that was a big queue, and you went along a line, and as you walked along, they give you all sorts of things: your boots, your socks, your underwear, all your kit. As you went along, they just what you size them. If they put out on your head, it, if it went down to your ears, it fitted. You know, that sort of thing. And then they give you a kit bag, which was already prepared, and then you had to go and sort it all out from there. But you had, or actually, obviously, you had instructions from people who was there to look after you and that. I mean, it was 6 weeks basic training there.
Now, so your kit, that's your kitty now. What about a haircut?
Oh. Up the back and over the top. So you had a little tuft on the front. And I had a damn haircut before I went. That was the annoying thing about it.
Did you mind? I mean,
well, you didn't have to. I mean, there was about four barbers in a room similar to this, and there were four chairs. He sat in there, and he put his hand on your head, and he went zoom, 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 and that was it. Everybody got the same. It didn't.
Were you fussy about your hair at this? Because it was a time in the 50s where hair was quite important for a while, wasn't it?
No, not really. I wasn't all that fussy about it.
So you didn't have one of these fancy cuts?
No. I'm talking about 52. I mean, later in the 50s, yes, when all the pop stars come out with all the quiffs and Elvis.
So it hadn't really started.
It hadn't really started then.
So, now, tell me about your accommodation. You were in the annex first, were you?
In the annex, yeah.
Now, what was the annex accommodation like? Can you describe your
room? It was a big block. There must have been 20 beds down each side. Then at the end you had kind of a... They were youths, boys, who had gone through training and had stopped on. And they was there as like supervising.
Did you have a locker or anything?
Yes, you had a locker and your bed and blankets, the sheets, pillows, pillowcases, everything. It was all supplied. And then the next job was to sew your name in every article of clothing you had.
Now, could you? The reason I ask is a lot of people couldn't sew and still can't.
Yeah, and it's a chain stitch. I can remember that. I can still do it. I've still got my housewife, forgive me.
So you just sew it into everyone?
Every underpants, socks, everything. And with the boots, they had the punches. It was punched into the leather at the top, your name.
And did the teacher have to do this chain stitch before you started, or did you know?
No, I didn't know, but they showed you what to do and that. But if your name was Fitzgerald, Montague Fitzgerald, I mean, you were in the shit. But if your name was Lee and that, you were okay.
And Wilson's not too bad.
It's not too bad, but some people had finished a week before anybody else, you know, because it's a short name. But if you just had a long name, it was just unfortunate.
Now, tell me, we look at a typical day's training, you know, so that we can see what life was like. So how would your day start at Shotley? At Scandi, sorry.
Well, they'd rake you out of bed, what time would it be? 6:30, by throwing the dustbin up the mess deck, wake everybody, or tannoy system, hands off cocks and grab your socks and all this business. That's how you got woke up. Then you might have to go over the mast at Ganges.
Well, before first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, well, let's.
Well, when there's ice on it as well.
Tell me about, because can you just explain what going over the mast was? Because a lot of people don't know and don't realise how tricky it is.
A mast, it like an old sailing ship mast. Must have been 60 foot high. And it had all the rigging all the way up, and it was netted if you fell off with a safety net. But I think if you fell off, you'd go through the net and come out like chips underneath it, type of thing. But quite often you had to, well, you wouldn't go right over the top, but you go up, say, halfway up and down the other side, still in your pyjamas. Another time, they'd roust you out,
and you'd have to double to the swimming pool, dive in one end and out the other.
Sticking to the mast.
Yeah.
Well, how bad was the mast? I mean, some people seem to have been very scared by it, or nervous of heights. I mean,
I suppose at that time most kids did climb anyway. You're a 15-year-old. I mean,
so it wasn't too bad for you.
Not too. I mean, they used to slum all over it on a Sunday when it was free period. The mast would be crowded with people
for fun.
Yeah, climbing up it.
Did you have to go out? There's one place where you have to go out. To
go out under
the lubber's hole, and there's the
yeah.
The way
you
out.
You go up like that, and then you have to go that way.
Out. So you're hanging over.
Yeah, hanging over, but it's now, not
did
like.
Did you go that way?
Oh yeah, I've done it. I've done it, but
most people go through the lubber's, but they all.
Yeah, yeah. And then they used to slide down the stays that hold it up. I mean, they didn't. Come down the ladder, they used to get onto this and slide down like on a rope. Then when there's special occasions, when they used to have what do they call it, when they dressed the mast and you had
they had
a button boy. I couldn't do that because all you had was a button that big.
They can't see, remember, so
big as this, perhaps a dinner plate.
Yeah, about a foot, 10 inches across.
Yeah, 10 inches across, and then you got the lightning conductor on there, and that was all he had to hold on to, and it's done on the top of it.
I
wouldn't do that, no way.
Did you go that holly though, ever?
I went up to the part just below that, then you had to shin up from that section up to the top. You had to shin up that.
Up the mast,
yeah.
Itself.
Yeah, mind you, there's cables on it, but you still had to shin up there and stand up somehow. But, no. No. Not for me.